But what was happening in Ireland at the time, you had a civil war in the 1922, so you were 14, 15 at that stage.
I was there when the rising broke out. I remember because that story of my mother coming from Broadstone down was the beginning of the rising of 1916. Mm. I was there, I remember, any war that started. Yeah, I remember my mother coming in one day and saying, they're firing on such a place. They're firing on such a place. Oh, and I remember up on Mount Street, I had a pal who lived on that road. And from her front window, you could view troops going backwards and forwards. And we saw these troops going into town. And that was the beginning of it, really. They were coming off the boat. They were coming in into town. They had to come in that road. And they passed by her house and went on into town. But at one stage, there was a nursing home up on the Strand Road. And this nurse, McKeown, she was very Republican. She was into it up to her neck. And she used to collect money and places and for them and that. But she had this big nursing home. And she used to have a crowd of the Republican people in, and she'd a big bowl in the middle of the table with cigarette butts in it, you know, and that. Because I was in it one day and I saw all these cigarette butts. And the place was in a state, and she said, "Oh, I had a raid in here today." She said, "I had the crowd in first, and then," she says, "when they were gone, they stacked all their rifles behind the hall door." And now it was one of these very big houses, and you could close the door back and you wouldn't know what was behind the door. But the eldest, one of the lads out of the house, had taken all the rifles out of the room and put them in behind this door. And he stood with his back to the door and chatted to them when the military came to raid. And he stood with his back to the door, chatting with them as they came in. And they came in and they searched her. Said, "Oh, you've had a crowd in here today." "Well," she says, "you needn't tell me how often I'm raided here. You know how often I'm raided." And she said, "I can't clean up after every time the men go out." She said, "I have a nursing home to run. And look, I can't come in here and clean up after all a crowd of men coming in and their cigarette butts." And the place was strewn with men refuse. And anyway, they said they wanted to search the house. "Oh, yes," she said, "certainly." Her own husband was asleep downstairs, drunk. But
and this was during the Civil War?
This was during the Civil War, yes. And they saw the state of the room. She says, "You don't expect me to come in and clean up after every raid. You know how often I'm raided here," she said. And she took them. She says, "Yes, come on, you can search the house." And she took them up the stairs and she brought them into the different rooms. But in her own bedroom, there was a huge big gun that she couldn't fit into the wardrobe. She tried to put it into the wardrobe, but the nozzle of it kept sticking out. So she got an old coat or bundle of clothes and threw them over it and left the door half open. And she showed the search party round, and he looked in and she said first, "Look, this is my room, and as a gentleman, would you mind if you don't come into my room?" Now, the man in charge of the military was a gentleman, really. He was a very nicely spoken man and a gentleman, really. And he said, he looked and he said, "Well, look, if you give me your word of honour that there is not a man in that room," he said, "I'll take your word." She said, "I'll give you my word of honour, there is no man in that room." So he said, "All right, I won't go into it." So he didn't go into her bedroom. They went on, and in the meantime, her eldest fellow, Jimmy, was standing at the hall door with his back to the door like this, and all the rifles were stacked in behind the back door, the front door.
Yeah, I know.
And he stood with his back to it, and he chatted with the soldiers coming in and had password them and had a pleasant time, and eventually they went out, they left.
Wait, I mean, the people you're talking about, who were they?
Nurse McKeown was up to her neck in the Republican movement.
And was she a friend or a...
She was my mother's nurse at home when she was having her babies at home. She used to come in.
She's
a midwife, yes. And she used to come in.
And she told your mother this story?
She did, yes. But she was very friendly. Like, she used to come in sometimes and sit at our fire and have a chat. And she'd come in for a rest often. And we'd be listening to it, you know. She wouldn't mind around. Sometimes she'd look around. "Any children here? Send them out." If it was someone she didn't want them to hear, send the children out.
But wait, you must have been, you've obviously heard these stories. You must have taken a great interest in your time.
Oh, I did, yes.
What was happening around you.
Yes.
And could you tell me then, how... The mood of the people, I mean, it was either people went with Collins or people went with De Valera. Were your family in the middle or were they...
We didn't, as children, we didn't take sides. Besides, we kept quiet when we were told to keep quiet, and we did this when we were told to do this. And.
Mm-hmm. But would you have heard arguments? Would you have heard your mother and your father say... you know, your father talking about De Valera being...
My father didn't argue at all with my mother.
I mean a conversation about the politics at all.
No, they didn't talk politics. Both accept the other's ideas. And Daddy listened and he might pass a remark or two or something about what such a thing happened in such a place. And my mother might say, "Well, that was because of such a thing and such a thing and such a thing." Or she might say, "Such a thing happened in such a place."
And do you remember the excitement when Colin signed the agreement and we had a free state?
Yes.
What do you remember about that
time? I can remember about that, my mother was very stricken with it because she said, "A free state, that's not what we want." She says, "We don't want a free state. He's betrayed us." She said, "Collins has betrayed us." And that's what I remember about that. She said, "He should never..." They were told going over, they were to sign nothing. See, De Valera told them, said, "Sign nothing without sending word home first to tell us what's happening." But they went ahead and signed without getting the okay at home. And that's what started the big separation.
Mm. So what was the mood generally of the people? Were people, you know, when you... Well, you mixed with your friends, and did your friends kind of... pass any comment or...
No, my friends didn't really. No, you kept these things at home. You didn't talk about these things abroad.
You didn't show your politics, your colours?
No.
Did you not?
No. That was our business.
Okay, now, so moving to a stage when the economy at the time...
Mm-hmm.
Were things... Was money scarce? Were things hard?
Food was scarce. And tea was practically impossible to get. But now and again, there'd be a knock at the door and someone would hand in a pound of tea to us. Now, we knew where it came from, but we said thank you very much and took the tea in, because we knew that Hedda's mother would have given it to somebody who was coming down to Monaghan, teachers again, I think they were. And she'd give it to them and they'd get it sent down to Dublin by some means or other. Some of them they'd know coming to Dublin and told to pass it in to us. And we just handed in at our hall door and we'd say thank you and we'd write and thank her.
And during the 30s then, they were known as the Hungry 30s. People were leaving and farmers were in trouble because of the economic war.
Oh, yes.
What do you remember about that time?
Well, I remember that I became very expert at making, unleavened bread, yeast bread. And I used to make a lot of it. And my father loved yeast bread. And, I became a good baker and I baked a lot and we always had plenty to eat. I used to bake every day practically. I always baked for the tea anyway, but I would bake in the morning too if necessary. Mm. And I became, as I say, expert at yeast bread, and I used to make that. For my father, he loved the yeast bread.
And what age were you when you left home?
When I left home originally, when I got married, I was, what age was I when I got married? Married in 1942.
All right.
Before that.
Okay. But could you tell me then... So for all those years that you lived at home, and because you were nearly the eldest, you were the second, I think you said, were you kind of looking after everyone?
Yes, I had to mind the children and I had to do this and I had to do that. And I'd say, Mama, it's not fair. When you're going to town, you take Gerald or you take Eta and you leave me at home always to mind the house. Well, I have to leave you in charge because you're the eldest girl and... If the Eta and Gerald were left at home, they'd fight. She didn't know how I used to fight with Eta. But she always say, I have to leave you in charge when I go out because you're the eldest girl and you're the one that I can trust to do this. And she'd give me the keys of her desk. She had a lovely writing desk that she got for a present from her brothers, I think, brought it to her from abroad. It was a beautiful writing desk and she kept her money in it in different sections. And when she'd get money from Daddy, she'd put it in a section. But she'd give me the keys of the desk and she'd go to my desk and get such a thing out of it. I was the trusted one of the family. That's all the good it did me.
I suppose putting each one of your siblings through college and or through education of a kind.